All right, and welcome everyone to another Sunday afternoon here on Revolution Radio. I am Stephen Roberts, and as the promo said, this is Cancel the Cabal. I have a very special guest on today, a young man from Illinois. Not sure what the town is right now. He will explain that a little bit later, but I see he's already in the chat room. He's been in there for a little bit. We are going to talk about controversies that surround the traditional publishing houses and self-publishing companies. A little bit of a bio. Aaron Ozy is a best-selling American poet that has published 9 books of poetry since 2011, writing his first collection titled Celestial Inferno, Poems of Another Realm, at the age of 15, actually. So he is quite a young man. I know he's not even old enough legally to drink in most states, but I want to welcome to the show Aaron Ozy. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me on today.
Poetry, is that starting to make a comeback?
It certainly is. You know, it kind of took a dive around maybe the late 60s, early 70s. You know, it didn't really do much for us over the last 30, 40 years here, but I see a rise in poetry now, especially among teenagers like myself and young adults. You know, it's becoming quite the popular craft, you know, for people, you know, to use in order to express their emotions, as well as to connect with others, you know, show them, you know, what their opinions may be, you know, what they're feeling, what life experiences they've had or shared with others. So yeah, to answer your question directly, you know, poetry is making quite the powerful comeback, and I think it's, you know, more opportune now for an aspiring writer to get involved in that genre in particular, you know, than it ever has been.
Yeah, yeah. In the chat room there, you mentioned about the controversies, and I spoke of it briefly, but we can touch upon that in a little bit.
Definitely.
You are just 19, aren't you?
Yes, I am, Stephen. I just turned 19 in May 22nd, just a month or two ago.
Ah, okay. Well, very good. I think you mentioned in the pre-Skype talk that you're in college. What are you actually studying, and where are you going?
Yeah, I currently attend the College of DuPage in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, and my major is marketing. So this upcoming semester, I will be a sophomore in college. So I probably have another about 2 years left at COD before I officially transfer to Benedictine University, which is located in Lisle, Illinois, which is their main campus, to achieve my major.
Oh, that's some good stuff. I think a lot of people like you are starting to work a little bit smarter than trying to work harder. I mean, not that you're not working hard. It's just, it's not a physical, labor, is it?
Right. You know, I've always believed in creating a job rather than taking a job from someone. You know, I personally know how hard it can be, you know, to go out and seek positions with different employers, you know, the stresses associated with, you know, preparing yourself for something like that. You know, it could become, you know, quite troublesome for you, you know, and it ultimately damages your mental capacity in order to focus on success. So I believe, you know, just right from the beginning, you know, that I knew writing was going to turn into something wonderful for me. I wanted to not only assume it as an ability, but more as a profession, you know, hence when I created Ozy Holdings back in 2014 in April, I felt like that was the next step I needed to take in order to convert all my published works into more of a company per se.
Explain what Ozy Holdings is. Explain what you do there.
Well, you know, there's two parts to that. The first part is that there's not been a company like Ozy Holdings ever. You know, I've never seen something like it arise in the literary community. The second part that I want to get into is that Ozy Holdings primarily manages all of my published products or anything that I've ever created, blog posts, articles that I've written, books that I've published, endorsements that I've given to other authors or other products, everything that you can think of that I've ever, you know, released into the world, you know, based out of my creation. It manages it from a business side, you know, instead of me approaching you know, people who are pirating my content, which actually happened quite often, you know, over the last few years here. People have tried to download my books digitally from directly from my publisher's website, or even just other retailers that carry my published products, and they've uploaded on their own websites for free. And, you know, when I started seeing these crimes being committed, I went ahead and sent them emails and said, listen, you know, this is wrong, you know it's wrong, or maybe you don't, you know, maybe you're just so blind to the fact of what you've done that you don't really care. But I, Aaron Ozy, as the author and, you know, ultimately the creator of this content, demands you to take it down. I got no responses from them, you know, and I felt so terrible because I was just basically letting them do it. You know, obviously I wasn't behind them, you know, committing this act, but they went ahead and did it without even considering the type of damage, you know, that it would cause to me. So now if anything like that happens again, Ozy Holdings would be the business front that approaches them and says, listen, you have legally violated several copyright laws. You know, you are illegally distributing this content without the authorization of the publishers that initially released it, as well as the creator of the content, which would be me. And we demand you to take it down, or else you will be forced to face legal action. So now it's more legally binding, you know, in terms of protecting myself from, you know, pirates such as those people who did these things.
Sure. And you're referring to people that get torrents off the internet.
Right, you know, I mean, right, you know, sometimes, you know, people will go ahead and they'll actually pay the price for my book, you know, directly from my publisher's website, you know, in this case, my ebook publisher, Smashwords, or straight from, you know, different retail websites, download it, and then convert it into a PDF and upload it for free online.
Yes, I'm sorry, Aaron. Zippy in the chat room there just brought up a pretty good question. Does the Writers Guild of America help with that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it does. You know, I've communicated with them, you know, every so often. You know, they, you know, they're a very legitimate organization. I believe that, you know, they help writers, you know, protect what they've created, and also to help them progress, you know, towards, you know, the field of success. But primarily, you know, it's really up to the publishers and, you know, eventually the author to take control of a situation like that. Your publishers, you know, have a lot of legal backing to them, especially myself, the self-publishing companies that I work with, Lulu, Smashwords, and the Audiobook Creation Exchange, which manages my audiobooks. You know, they have a lot of legal backing that supports what they do. You know, they have many lawyers that look at cases like these on a daily basis. And, you know, they take it very seriously. But, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't move quickly enough. And sometimes the author has to be the one to take the reins and make something happen. You know, they have to be the one responsible to, you know, go ahead, put the first foot forward and, you know, defeat this, you know, this case.
Yes, absolutely, because if you don't protect yourself, nobody else is really willing to do that unless there's, I don't know, specialized people that go out there and just do that kind of thing, have their own company or something. But I just thought of something also, just a quick follow-up to that question, or
sure,
to that statement there. I'm not sure, but I think inevitably somebody on the inside has to pretty much release someone's material for that type of thing to happen, isn't it?
Not necessarily, you know, because like I said before in a statement that I made, you know, just a few minutes ago about this situation, people go ahead and go directly to, for instance, my publisher's website or retailer, you know, such as Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million, you know, you name it, you know, any one of the main retailers that, you know, sells books to the consumers. You know, they'll go ahead and pay the full price for the publication. And then in some way, I'm not really sure how, you know, the technical process associated with it, but they'll take the content, remove it, remove all the copyrights or any digital signatures that the publisher or retailer puts on it, you know, in order to identify it as a registered product. And then they'll go ahead and convert it into whatever form they like and upload it to their own websites to be shared free, you know, with other users, or they'll charge their own amount, maybe even more than the, you know, amount that it was being sold for, and generate profit illegally.
Yeah. I believe you mentioned at the age of 15 is when you started writing.
I published my first book when I was 15, which was Celestial Inferno, Poems of Another Realm. I actually started writing when I was 5 years old. I started creating picture books. At first, I created two little miniature series. One was The Hungry Crab, and the other one was Oro, which was a fantasy character who would battle Gorgons and ogres and, you know, try to, you know, defeat evil. You know, it was very childish, but, you know, at the time, it was very exciting to me, you know, to get a chance to see my name on paper, even though I was the one writing it, you know. But it was really fascinating to see how I was able to express such unlimited creativity through my writing. So beyond that, I went ahead and started creating short stories when I turned 7 all the way up to 11 years old. And I would actually share them at school with some of my teachers. One teacher in particular, in 8th grade, I met, her name was Cynthia Oberman. She was actually the woman who inspired me to start writing poetry. So I owe her quite a lot, you know, in terms of paying those people back who have supported my career all for these many years. She would always listen to the short stories that I had to offer, be very critical about, you know, grammar and, you know, sentence structure, syntax, you know, specifically, as well as, you know, she would give me suggestions that would help me improve the story overall, you know, modify the storyline, you know, to make sure that it delivered the effect that, you know, it was originally intended to do. But eventually one day she said, you know, Aaron, it seems like you have such a ability to deliver the reader into a world that is so unique and so specific in nature, and then rip them right out of it and make them wonder what happened or, you know, what's next, you know, to this story. So she's like, I think you'd be better off writing poetry because in that way you're able to let your imagination flourish, you know, in any way that you like, but at the same time, you know, create a realm in which someone can enter, experience millions of different things at once, and then all of a sudden step out and be like, I want more. I want to read more of, you know, I want to read more about this creation. You know, I want to, you know, be exposed to this type of writing, you know, even further. So I not really at first, I didn't really know how to, you know, compose a poem, but, you know, after doing a lot of research online, you know, for what resources I had available, as well as reading different poets such as Robert Frost, Edgar Allan Poe, Sylvia Plath, Franz Kafka, you know, the main poets that have, you know, existed throughout, you know, the throughout the different centuries we've had occur, you know, it really gave me the resources that I needed in order to create my first poem. And, you know, my first poem is included in my first book, Celestial Inferno. It's titled Judgment. And I spent maybe several weeks, you know, trying to, you know, change different elements of the poem around, make it more appealing, you know, make it, you know, more attractive to those people who are not really, you know, fond of poetry. I wanted to make it relatable as possible. And that poem has been, you know, interpreted by so many different people, and no one to date has been able to tell me directly straight to my face what it means, on the first try. So I kind of pride myself on that. You know, I put a lot of thought into it, but based on that one poem, you know, I knew at that moment that poetry was going to be, you know, the gateway to success for me, you know, in some way, shape, or form, you know, not right away, but I knew something great was going to come out of it, you know. But I really do appreciate, you know, my teacher, Cynthia Oberman in 8th grade, you know, for suggesting that to me. You know, I owe her the world. You know, I mean, everything, you know, that has happened beyond that point has been because of her. You know, obviously I was the one doing it, but her wisdom and her unique talent for, you know, giving me advice, you know, really inspired that.
Well, I think that's that kind of a message is maybe lost in a lot of today's language and a lot of today's society. But you know, I maybe just some people it resonates better than others.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, especially some of the most successful people today, you know, in our society, forget about those small people, you know, at one point in their life that gave them a word of encouragement or, you know, supported their efforts, and they lose that, you know, on the way to success. And, you know, I think it's very upsetting, you know, especially to me, you know, that they forget these people. You know, for instance, there is an author actually named Jessica Hickey who is writing a biography about my life and career as an author and entrepreneur. It's not set to be released for another year or two because it is quite the lengthy project, and I want to make sure that it's, you know, formed in the best way possible. But at the beginning of the book, I decided that it was time for me to announce all those people that contributed to my success as an author specifically. So I went ahead and named all. I mean, there's like probably like over 100 different names on there. But, you know, that small token of dedication, you know, to these individuals is what is going to make, you know, this biography very special for me. You know, not only is the book going to explain, you know, the different steps that I had to take to become such a success, but it's going to explain to people what I had to sacrifice in order to get there, as well as, you know, what I had to set aside, you know, like basically my childhood or my teenage years in order to achieve the next best thing. But, you know, it will, this story will, you know, hopefully tell those people how much they mean to me and, you know, what kind of impact they had on my life.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Zippy7591 is one of your friends or not, Aaron, but a teacher affects eternity. He can never tell where his influences stop, by Henry Adams. I think that's a pretty good statement there. But
yeah, it is. You know, I mean, I think, you know, educators have a very powerful impact on, you know, people they teach, you know, and the knowledge that they're giving them is so strong in nature and has so many meanings behind it, you know, to ultimately support it on its way from, you know, their mind to, you know, the students. But they have such a powerful impact on your life and, you know, make it possible for you to, you know, grow and increase in your own way and, you know, progress, you know, towards success, you know, in the best way possible. So I think that quote is very powerful. You know, I appreciate Zippy7592 for sharing that in the chat room with us today.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that you are also in the chat because you put a few things in there and maybe said hi to some people. But I think, well, just one last question or maybe one or two before we get into the actual meat of the argument.
Sure.
That we're going to get into. Why poetry at such a young age?
You know, I mean, it's such a, you know, I mean, I don't mean to, you know, get on, you know, what you asked, but, you know, that is such a tough question. But, you know, if I were to, you know, respond in any way to that, it would be poetry is truth. You know, there is so much truth in poetry that you can't go wrong, you know, because even though, you know, people don't really understand a poem right away or think it's too sophisticated for them to understand, or it's not appealing to their literary needs, or, you know, if someone's a dedicated reader and they don't really find poetry as, you know, a pleasure, there's still so much behind the poem that you don't really see at first, but you have to really dig in order to find those different meanings behind it. Because a poet, when they go and when they set out to write a new poem, you know, for instance, I'm speaking about myself here. When I go ahead and sit down in front of the computer, in front of a piece of paper, and I try to think of a new poem, I don't really think, you know, I don't really think about the meanings that I want to put behind the poem. You know, sometimes that happens, you know, like I want to write about, you know, nature. So I'm going to write a whole poem about, you know, spending time in the forest with my family or something, you know, just for an example. Sometimes, you know, you go ahead and use the words start just pouring out, and eventually at one point you feel like you've said enough, and you read the poem and you can't really, even the writer sometimes, you know, or the poet can't really understand, you know, what they just written. But over time, you can see the uniqueness in, you know, the poem and understand, you know, where it originated from. Because, I mean, all ideas have a source, you know, and sometimes you may not realize it, you know, that they do. But over time, you know, after, you know, reviewing that idea over and over and over again and getting people, you know, in on it, you know, have them look at it and, you know, give their feedback, you know, eventually, you know, you understand that there is this underlying truth behind everything that you compose, you know. know, as a writer. You know, so that's why I think I chose poetry. You know, it's the best way for me to express my inner self, as well as to, you know, draw out, you know, the structure that holds my creativity together.
Are there specific areas of interest that you concentrated on your poetry, or?
Yeah, you know, when I wrote my first book, Celestial Inferno, there wasn't really a unifying theme that connected all the poems together. You know, Celestial Inferno deals with heaven, hell, greed, and love. Those are the four main subjects that Celestial Inferno is based on. You know, and I felt like that book in particular was going to touch on very important arguments, as well as to explain different ideas so efficiently that it would draw enough people in order to stimulate enough interest to get another book going. You know, so that's when I created Peacefully Poetic, which is all about nature poems. So that's when I kind of switched to more, you know, that's when I switched to more singular subjects, you know, like nature or heaven or hell or, you know, life or, you know, my third book, Scribed Asylum, is based on true events that have actually happened in my life. And it actually says so in the title page of the book. You know, so each book, you know, or each collection of poetry, I should say, deals with different subjects, you know, but really there's, you know, from the books that I've published recently and up until now, you know, it revolves around one primary idea.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. I guess we can go ahead and get into the, well, I think you got a storm coming in there where you're at, don't you?
Yeah, you know, Chicago, you know, if anyone on the chat room who lives in Chicago or has been to Chicago, you know, we have all four seasons here. So every other day, you know, it's either
sometimes
storming
in one
or
day,
sunny,
yeah,
or snowing. So, you know, it's always changing. But, you know, apologize for the noise.
No, that's okay. That's okay. This is, we're not professionals here. But anyways, let's go ahead and talk about what you put in the chat there earlier about the controversies between the conventional and the so-called historical publishing houses and the new internet publishing.
Yeah, sure. You know, there are a lot of differences that separate traditional publishing houses from self-publishing companies. Traditional publishing houses are very, I mean, they are very organized. You know, they date back, you know, for hundreds of years. You know, some of them are still family owned. Some of them are all, you know, some of them all have converted into the corporate sector, you know, and they're all about, you know, profit. You know, some are about, you know, producing, you know, wonderful pieces of literature. You know, each publishing house is going to have its different missions. But, you know, they're very, very set aside from the fact that, you know, technology is evolving and self-publishing companies are eventually going to take over. You know, I mean, the ability to publish a book is becoming more and more easier as time goes on, that eventually one day, you know, it's going to become so easy, in fact, that no one's ever going to want to publish their book, you know, with some of those traditional publishing houses. Because as I have noticed that over the last few decades here, it's become harder and harder for aspiring authors to get their work even looked at by a literary agent or a publishing house for that matter. And, you know, by, you know, the, you know, based on the difficulty involved with that process, writers are more compelled to go with self-publishing companies such as Lulu or Smashwords or ACX when publishing their book and releasing it into the marketplace. You know, they think that, you know, these publishing these traditional publishing companies are, you know, are so stuck up, and, you know, they're not willing to accept, you know, different ideas and, you know, evolve with, you know, technology as it grows. And, you know, that's one main reason that separates the two industry spaces from each other.
Well, inevitably, Aaron, doesn't a traditional publishing house make a lot more profits off of written books that are you know, published on paperback or hardcover?
Yeah, and you know, that's true. You know, I mean, there are a lot of publishing houses such as Random House, for example. You know, I mean, Random House is one of the largest traditional publishing houses in the world. And I mean, they generate millions upon millions of dollars, you know, from famous authors, you know, such as Stephen King or, I mean, I'm just saying an example. I mean, Stephen King is not represented by Random House, but, you know, I mean, they make, you know, huge profits off of authors, you know, such as Stephen King or J.K. Rowling or, you know, E.L. James. You know, I'm just releasing, you know, these, you know, wonderful pieces of literature into the marketplace. And, you know, yeah, I mean, they do, you know, pride themselves on, you know, carrying a lot of, you know, prolific authors in their portfolio. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, sometimes they're not willing to accept these new and aspiring authors, you know, into their community. And, you know, eventually some of these authors will go down the self-publishing route and make millions for their own, you know, and then these traditional publishing houses are like, oh man, we should have picked up that author when we had a chance, you know. So, I mean, they don't really see too far in front of them is what I'm saying. You know, they refuse to accept, you know, the different traditions that are being created as time progresses.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda, maybe one of those things. But
you're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think respectability or just notoriety has something to do with that, or?
You know, I've always, this is kind of how I've seen it, you know, primarily, you know, from since I started publishing, you know, my own works. Traditional publishing houses, you know, try to aim, you know, for those prolific authors, you know, that are very notable, that are critically acclaimed, you know, that are talked about most often, you know, and they, I mean, I would too, you know, I mean, if I own my own traditional publishing house, I would be looking for the best authors out there too, you know, to try to bring them in, you know, try to have them publish with me, you know, so I can generate more profit. But in the end, though, you know, you need to realize that those authors started out somewhere. You know, they were as, you know, simple as, you know, all the other authors out there today, you know, that are trying to get their works published. You know, I mean, they have been, you know, they were probably writing, you know, books here and there, and, you know, were writing articles or poems or plays, and, you know, had nowhere else to go to get them published. But you know, one day, you know, the publishing houses, you know, saw that they were having moderate success and said, hey, you know, let's bring them in, you know, let's talk to them, see if we can bring them on board with us. But, you know, today, it doesn't seem like that morality still exists. You know, it seems like, you know, we're so, you know, the industry is so modern in nature that it refuses to accept the truth that, you know, self-publishing is now the dominant route to take when you know, someone's going about publishing a book, you know, and they don't really accept that, you know, as truth. You know, they see it as self-publishing is like a virus, you know, that it's just spreading throughout the industry, and it's eventually gonna, you know, take them down with them, you know, and it's just gonna introduce a whole different regime to the publishing industry and, you know, push them out to a point where they will no longer exist.
Yeah. I'm not looking to get into conspiracies or anything, Aaron, but do you think there is such a conspiracy that might keep talented, good people down and prop others up and put them on a pedestal? Or,
you know, I don't really believe in that directly, but I do believe that, you know, different agents that support self-publishing houses do try to sabotage aspiring authors. Even myself, you know, I told you about this in one of our earlier conversations over the phone, but I published an article with an online publication called Publishing Perspectives, and their editor, the editor-in-chief of that publication, Edward Nowaka, explained to me that, you know, the online magazine is, you know, it is a trade piece, you know, it does publish trade pieces, and, you know, there are a lot of, you know, hardcore publishers and writers that follow the content that's posted on there and, you know, don't really look at anything else. You know, they want to seek out, you know, the publication for advice, you know, on how to move forward and how to, you know, look for different tips that are going to help them improve, you know, their career. You know, so I went ahead and wrote an article called 10 Steps to Become Successfully Self-Published. And, you know, it was the 10 steps that I took in order to get where I am as a best-selling author, and, you know, kind of where you should take it beyond that. And, you know, I put a lot of effort into this article, and there was a lot of thought behind it. I really thought it was going to make a powerful impact, but as soon as it got released on the website, I was getting all these negative comments on the article, you know, saying that I myself, you know, am not a best-selling author, you know, my books, you know, are no more good than, you know, teenage writing, you know, just silly comments such as that. And, you know, I felt really bad about it, you know, but in the end, I stand behind my work no matter what. You know, these comments were so shallow, you know, altogether that, you know, they didn't really make sense, you know. So I kind of went ahead and looked at one of the people that commented on this article, and I did a search about them, and I did find them on the internet, but they themselves have never published any books. They have never gone through the publishing process before. You know, all they probably did was read a bunch of fancy books that cost them hundreds of dollars, you know, to get, and, you know, went on, you know, websites such as Publishing Perspectives just to nag on other people and, you know, order to make themselves feel good about it, you know. And this happens all the time to aspiring authors, and I've spoken to so many other teenagers, you know, that have experienced similar things, and I told them, listen, you should not listen to these people. You know, you are your own person. Your abilities should not be prevented by any outside forces at all. And you should just be focusing on succeeding in life. Don't let others tell you what you can't do. Because I myself, even before I published my first book, I had so many people tell me that, you know, my writing was never going to amount up to anything. I was never going to publish a book. You know, I had nothing special about my creative works. Nothing. All that, I mean, was coming out. And I was just so resilient to what they were saying that I said, you know what, I'm tired of people trying to, you know, hate on what I'm doing. I don't want to listen to them. I just got to go ahead and make something happen for myself. And that's what I did. I went ahead and collected all 52 of my original poems, published my first book, and I came back to them. I said, now what? What do you have to say further beyond that that is going to make me feel worse? You know, I there's nothing that I believe that you could say that would bring me down at this point. You know, I mean, and, you know, that happens to people every day. You know, I mean, people try to aspire to certain things and try to claim positions in different careers, or, you know, try to go ahead and publish their own book. And, you know, there's always going to be those doubters out there. And, you know, reason why they doubt, you know, that's, you know, has yet to be seen. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, they're delivering these negative comments because they themselves wish they could have succeeded early on in life or at some point in their life and didn't have the chance, or, you know, they got it caught up with other things, like, you know, with starting a family or having a baby, you know, grow up in their household, or, you know, they got laid off at work, you know, and they have nothing else to do, you know, I mean, but there are so many, you know, there are so many things that could cause these people to act this way, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they should take it out on people who actually have a chance at succeeding. You know, I mean, I think that's just blatantly wrong.
Well, I think you hit upon something there, Aaron. I think a lot of people do criticize others because they had some kind of a shortcoming somewhere in their life, or maybe they believe the rhetoric that others were criticizing them about. And they took it to heart, so they are attacking you or others because of their successes.
Right. You know, I before we go on and I talk a little bit more about this, I do want to say that there was this one teenager over in England. His name was Kevin Thomas. He actually published his own book. I believe it published his first book at the age of 16. So I think he's just turned 17 not too long ago. But him and I keep in contact every now and then. But when we first met, we were talking about different circumstances, such as what I discussed recently, you know, about, you know, people commenting negatively on, you know, the work that we create. And he said, you know, there was a lot of people, even in his own family, that told him that he would never amount up to anything, you know, that based on their own experiences and, you know, the hardships that they experienced in life, you know, they believed that he would never achieve anything, you know, great or notable in any way, you know. And he had the same reaction I did. He said, you know what, he's like, screw these people. I don't really care what they think. You know, even though they're in my own family and I do respect them, you know, on the grounds of this, you know, I'm not going to listen to them. I'm going to go ahead, you know, try to find, you know, as many resources as that I possibly can, you know, collaborate my ideas together, even with others, and try to make something happen, you know, try to promote my work in the best way possible and to get it out there where it truly matters, you know, because really, you know, that's all really you have to do. You know, you have to be willing to express yourself openly to the public and be ready to receive negative comments like this. You know, you need to be prepared for negative feedback to come your way, because no one, you know, not everybody is going to love your work. You know, my audiobook narrator, Benjamin Powell, you know, he told me, he's like, Aaron, listen, he's like, I can't believe that you're sitting here you know, moping around about these people who negatively commented on your article, you know, the one that I published through Publishing Perspectives, or, you know, if they, you know, say bad things about your poetry. He's like, you know what? He's like, you know how many times people have come to me and say, you know, oh, my voiceovers are bad, or, you know, my voice sounds too squeaky, or, you know, the equipment that I'm using is not up to date, so I shouldn't be a narrator. You know, he's like, I just don't listen to them at all. He's like, you know, you need to persevere beyond that. He's like, you know, you are your own person. You know, you need to focus on what is best for you. You cannot be, you know, living life to appease others. You need to appease yourself. You know, you need to press forward, you know, take the bull by the horns and, you know, do what's best, you know, for your life. You know, make sure that, you know, you prosper and, you know, live a long, you know, and very fun-filled journey, you know, and make sure that, you know, you can exist, you know, beyond this, you know, in the best way possible. You know, do not let other people, you know, spoil your achievements with negativity. You know, that will just ruin you. I mean, if you're an aspiring writer, you know, to anyone who is listening to this interview right now, please do not listen to these people. You are going to come up, you may not have come across them yet, but you will eventually come across, you know, a person or many people, in fact, you know, that don't agree with what you're doing and believe what you're doing is unorthodox or is not suited for the industry space that you're in. But you know what? Don't listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. Yeah, you may have someone, you know, out there, you know, that's published a couple books, you know, has succeeded in their own way, but they shouldn't be, you know, intentionally going out into the world trying to find others that are doing the same thing that they did at one point and try to bring them down. That's just cruel. I mean, that's just like so predatory. It's unbelievable. You know, they should be praising what these people have done. You know, they should be trying to help them. You know, I am so open to helping, you know, authors, you know, that are trying to succeed with their, you know, with their works and trying to, you know, make something out of themselves. You know, I am there 100%, you know, if anyone is trying to, you know, figure out how this whole process works, you know, I want to help these people because really no one helped me out in the beginning. You know, I was not assisted in any way by any professionals in, you know, the publishing space. I had to figure it all out by myself, you know, and by doing that, the knowledge that I've obtained from these experiences, I would like to share with the world.
Yes, absolutely. And you have a Facebook page that has quite a following. If I'm not mistaken, it has like over 140,000 likes on your page or something like that, or?
Right. Yeah. You know, I noticed, you know, earlier on in my career, you know, when I figured out that, you know, the digital age was so dominant, you know, in the publishing space, you know, and that I needed to create an official website for myself as well as, you know, expand in the social media, you know, I went ahead and, you know, created every single social media profile that I could. I mean, currently right now I have approximately over 50 social profiles that I manage on a daily basis. You know, all of which, you know, each profile is managed under my company, OZ Holdings. You know, I have other people, you know, that assist me with, you know, releasing new content through these profiles, as well as, you know, I consult with these individuals, you know, and ask them, you know, how I should, you know, expand myself, you know, online and what's the next step I need to take. But, you know, eventually at one point, you know, my Facebook page was receiving so much attention, you know, that it generated all these likes, you know, from users across the, you know, Facebook network. And that interest eventually transitioned over into Twitter. And currently on Twitter, I have 254,000 followers and it's growing each day. I'm getting hundreds of follows per day. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, expanding at such an unusual yet, you know, astonishing rate. But eventually, you know, the interest just carried on to all my other social profiles. And, you know, eventually at one point, the internet knew who I was. You know, specifically, you know, search engines like Google, Bing and Yahoo, you know, they deemed me as a public figure. You know, they saw, you know, what I was doing. You know, they recognized all the content that was being posted about me, either by myself or third party sources. And, you know, it just, you know, beyond that, it was history, you know, and, you know, to date, you know, it's social media is one of the most profitable and most effective doorways for me to reach, you know, new readers in order for me to, you know, expose them to my work and hopefully, you know, generate more book sales. But like I said before, I'm not in this for the money. I've never set out, you know, to become an author to generate profit. I've always been in it for the glory of being published. You know, I would rather, you know, be broke and homeless, you know, and have no money at all, but still see my name on the billboards out in the streets, or, you know, see my book still on the shelves, because that is what truly matters to me.
Yeah, certainly. I wanted to go back and make a comment quick on the other subject we were just up on. Sometimes they're called oxygen thieves, or not oxygen thieves, psychological thieves. People that just want to bring someone else down. I believe there's an old saying that goes something like, misery loves company. So if somebody is miserable and about the only thing that they know how to do is try to bring someone else down, they will probably try to do that. But I wanted to give out the Studio A Skype number. If anybody would like to ask Aaron or me a question, it's 347-688-2902. We are welcome to callers or anybody who wants to join us. But
Yeah, definitely.
Ahead.
You know, if there's anyone on the chat right now, you know, that has a question for me in particular, or, you know, Steven for that matter, you know, about anything that we've discussed so far, you know, please, you know, join the Skype call. I really want to hear from you.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some of these mediums that that you're using. You mentioned Lulu.com and Smashwords and what's the other one again?
Audiobook Creation Exchange, or for short, ACX.
ACX.com, yes.
You know, these three self-publishing companies, you know, I chose very carefully. You know, I mean, there are many self-publishing companies out there that offer similar things, but, you know, these three companies in particular are, you know, the most used in the world. You know, I mean, Lulu is pretty much one of the main print publishers, you know, print publishers out there that, you know, invite self-published authors, you know, to come in, you know, publish their work, you know, and invite it, you know, and release it into the marketplace. You know, they have so many tools that they give to authors that can turn, you know, even just an amateur book into, you know, a bestseller for that matter. Like, for instance, E.L. James, author of 50 Shades of Grey, she initially published her, you know, the first book, 50 Shades of Grey, on Lulu. And a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, from there, her career instantly took off. And, you know, she went ahead and got represented by a main publishing house. And, you know, the possibilities beyond that point, you know, were limitless for her. You know, so Lulu is, you know, a gateway for aspiring writers to release their work into the world and really share it with the people that are interested in it. Smashwords, you know, going into that, you know, they are my ebook distributor as well as my publisher. You know, they have been growing exponentially over the last few years here. You know, they've been around for a little while now. And at first, you know, their platform was very dull. You know, they didn't really have a lot of functionality to it. You know, it was very difficult to, you know, prepare a book for publication. But now, you know, with the advancement of technology, you know, and the workforce that they accumulated, you know, they are one of the leading ebook publishers in the world, you know, and they continue to, you know, accept new authors left and right. You know, I think there's approximately maybe 250,000 authors that are a part of their network. You know, to date, they've published billions of words, you know, through their platform. You know, I mean, they have like this little ticker in the upper left side of their website, you know, that shows how many words they publish. And, you know, the number is always growing. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, the amount of content that they process on a daily basis. But the retailers that they're partnered with, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, you know, Kobo Books, you know, different retailers such as those, you know, it makes it possible for you to get listed by a prominent retailer with the click of a button. You know, I mean, it's that accessible. And lastly, you know, ACX, you know, or the Audiobook Creation Exchange, it's one of a kind. You know, there is not another website out there like it. You know, as I told you before, Steven, you know, before the show started today, you know, the platform that they have available for, you know, aspiring authors as well as narrators, you know, looking to, you know, embark on a project in the audiobook space, you know, is so advanced, you know, yet so simple, that it gives anyone basically the possibility, you know, or even the opportunity, you know, to make something out of yourself in that area. You know, I mean, creating an audiobook is, you know, no easy task. You know, it took approximately 10 months for my first audiobook for Celestial Inferno poems of another realm to be created. You know, it's like shooting a movie. You know, you have to shoot, you know, you have to capture the original, the raw content, you have to review it, you have to edit it, then you have to move on, and you know, you have to piece everything together. I mean, it's like just a huge process, you know, but it's so beneficial to do that, though, because especially for poetry, there's nothing like hearing a poem read by another person. You know, I mean, that's why there's so many poetry slams out there, you know, that invite aspiring poets or, you know, achieved poets, you know, to come up, you know, read their work to others, because poetry is so beautiful when it's read. You know, I mean, yeah, it's liberating to sit down and, you know, flip through a collection of poetry, you know, read each poem very carefully, you know, analyze it on your own, but it's so exciting to see it, you know, come to life, you know, because I, you know, some of the first poets that I ever learned of, you know, I heard their poetry through YouTube videos, as well as, you know, I was showed different poems being read by famous narrators in class, you know, going through junior high all the way up through high school. You know, and that was another way that I got really interested in poetry, because, you know, just the power, you know, the intensity, you know, behind each word, you know, that the poet put in their poem, you know, comes to life, you know, when it's read by someone else, you know, or even the poet themselves. You know, I myself, you know, enjoy reading my poetry to others, you know, but I thought it was very profitable for me to go ahead and get involved with ACX and to partner with a narrator in order to effectively yet very quickly, you know, release my work into this different medium and to reach a whole new marketplace that had never even heard of me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm assuming that smashwords.com and lulu.com really work along the same type of system then?
Yeah, you know, their publishing process is pretty similar. You know, Lulu's publishing process is very, very easy. You know, I mean, they just recently, just a few months ago, did a whole website redesign and improved their publishing platform. Now it's more accessible to people than it ever was. You know, when I started working with them back in 2011, their publishing platform was very hard to use. It just was very glitchy. You know, uploading a PDF file took, I don't know how long, maybe half hour, 40 minutes, you know, for it to be, you know, vetted by, you know, the support agents that they have looking at new content that's processed through their system. And then for it finally being prepared for publication, you know, through this automatic system that they have. But, you know, over the last few years, I mean, they've really made a leap, you know, from point A to point D. You know, I mean, they've, you know, introduced a lot of new features to the publishing platform that they have. And it's a lot easier for authors to go on there and release their content. But Smashwords is a little bit more difficult because you have to create what's called an EPUB file or, you know, a text file, for instance, you know, and it's very difficult to put one of those together. It's not like you can just, you know, create a PDF of your book and upload it through them and it's published instantly. You know, they actually take several days or even like a week or two, you know, to review the content you post and decide whether or not, you know, it meets the requirements they have set forward, you know, for new books being published through their system. And if it's rejected, then you have to go back, fix the file, make sure that, you know, all the technicalities associated with the file are met with their standards, and then you finally get the chance to release it through their publishing platform. But, you know, all in all, though, Stephen, you know, these two websites has very, very similar platforms, you know, that they use for publishing new content.
Well, I would have liked, well, we could have taken a call or two, but it seems like there's a lot of shy people out there today. But we've only got about 2.5 to 3 minutes left, Aaron. So if you would like to give out links or any kind of, you know, profiles or whatever. I know you're on LinkedIn and we...
Yeah, sure. You know, my two websites, you know, my personal website for me as an author is AaronOzie.com. It's just my name, you know, spelled regularly, you know, no capitals, no hyphens, nothing like that. My company's website is OzieHoldings.com, you know, just like the same as, you know, it's the same as my last name. It's spelled the same exact way. You know, so those are the two websites, you know, best to reach me at. You know, as well as to see, you know, what I'm doing currently, you know, in terms of writing or expanding my business. You know, I have blogs You know, because both those websites are powered by Blogger, which is owned by Google. So it's a great way for me to blog about my experiences and share, you know, these experiences with, you know, many readers, you know, across the world. You know, as well as, you know, I'm connected on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Google Plus, Snapchat, you know, every major social media network you can think of. You know, they're, the better I'm connected with my fans and, you know, the more available I am online, you know, the better it's going to be for people not only to reach me, you know, to seek out advice or, you know, to, you know, get personal one-on-one talks about, you know, certain subjects in which I cover, but it's gives me a way for me to deliver my content to them in the best way I can, you know, from what resources I have available, you know, in order for them to see how valuable my poetry really is and to see how you know, I should say, you know, to see what way it's changing, you know, the literary world as we know today.
Yeah. Well, you are still logged into the chat, so I would like to invite you after we hang up here to maybe grab all of those personal links and drop them into the chat. I will not be able to have the time to do that myself. I would have if I could. But you know, we have a little bit less than a minute left. Do you have any kind of like halftime locker room speech you'd like to give to the people, or anything like that? Or
yeah, sure. You know, I just want to thank you, Stephen, for having me on today, as well as, you know, for all the viewers out there, you know, listening to the interview. You know, just know that, you know, you Stephen, as well as, you know, everyone else who is listening, you guys are responsible for, you know, making my success, you know, journey even further, you know, than where it is today. You know, I mean, the support that, you know, all my friends, family, and fans have shown me over the last, you know, few years here is so monumental that it is going to, you know, bring me to the next level. So thank you so much. And I hope to be back on soon, Stephen.
Yes, and there's my music, Aaron Ozzie. I appreciate you coming on for the first hour.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I will talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good day over there. And we will be right back, everyone, after this break.